Yeah,
Donkey
sounds good.
balls. There we go. That's a started.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
So we meet Adam Jensen then. And henceforth, I will only ever think of him as Adam Jensen because that's his actual voice. And they did say that in the making of the Deus Ex game. But
I think for the games, he adjusts his voice, but like very slightly. I think he just goes a little bit deeper or something like that, but
slightly more serious.
Yeah, but he's that actor playing essentially an augmented spy. So he's like,
what is his name? Is it Elias Tefexis?
Yeah.
Do we know his name in the show?
I don't know if anybody said it, but I don't think so. And if so, I don't know what it is.
I can't remember what it is. I'm sure somebody mentioned it, but
so he's not a long-standing character. Then he's sort of one of the visiting.
Oh no! Don't assume that we're being. Never assume duplicity when it could be incompetence on our part.
Yeah, there are recurring characters who are kind of like they're not main characters; they're background characters who are in it throughout the whole thing, whose names I don't know.
Yeah,
like the UN second in command dude. I can never remember his name.
Oh god, no.
Yeah, no, I can't remember Secretary.
I can't remember his name, and he's still in it. I couldn't have told you his name.
Just one thing. I know we haven't had a clean start, but you didn't do our audio checks. Are we coming in through all right?
I'm all right.
Okay, good.
Has everybody eaten? This is where we talk about The Expanse and eat blue chews, right? Is everybody?
Well, I've got my breakfast biscuit here, but I think I'll save that till after the podcast. Because
what is it?
It's like a oat bite, 128 calories, cocoa and vanilla.
Mm. So, I'm sorry, I always have to ask about food. If somebody's eating food, I need to know.
I have no food today.
Well, they're like snacks.
I've got some cola. That's it.
Oh. I had fish and chips as a treat last night, just before I went to bed. And my sister didn't eat half of hers, so I ate that as well. And I was so fucking bloated when I went to bed. Like, properly fucking bloated. Like, when I was young, I could have shoveled that away and just, you know, gone out on a, like, bike ride. Mm. But now, like, I woke up still fucking bloated.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. But now, is it one of these chip shops that give you, like, phenomenally large, ridiculously large portions?
Oh, yeah. No, you get a small, and it's, like, enough for five people.
Chip shops
are like that, aren't they? I made macaroni cheese last night, and it went down very well with my guests. So.
Oh, fantastic. I love mac and cheese. Even, like, the vegan versions could be quite good. There's a restaurant that they have branches. They have a branch in Bristol, and I think they have one in Brighton. It's, like, it's called Uwi, but everyone I know accidentally calls it Uwu. And they do mac and cheese. And it is, I didn't even realize that mac and cheese actually ever got this good, right? And I like mac and cheese, but it was like they what's the term when they torch it? Like,
brulee.
I was thinking creme brulee, that's not it. No, it's just like brulee. But they did that with onions over the top, like they had this coating of onions.
That's not macaroni cheese anymore, but okay.
It's something and it sounds nice, but it's not macaroni.
All right.
It's like when I used to go to friends' houses and they'd be like, oh, we got rice pudding for pudding. I'd be like, fucking great, I love rice pudding. And then it's rice pudding with like spices in it. That's not rice pudding anymore. Yeah. The whole point of rice pudding is just milky, delicate flavour. You put cinnamon in it, just tastes of fucking cinnamon now.
I mean, I hate cinnamon.
Do you? But I don't want cinnamon.
I don't know. This is food puritanism. Is that the...
Well, I had a
it's about names.
Okay, names.
Yeah, it's about names.
Here's my take on shepherd's pie. And, you know, it's made out of rabbit with fucking... Like, that's not shepherd's pie anymore. You've made a lovely dish, but... Don't call it what it isn't.
Yeah, that was my argument. I had a big argument with Paul on the chat the other day about this, before I made it, and it's like, oh, you're going to put some such. And it's like, no, I'm making macaroni cheese. You put some butter in a pan, you melt it, you put some flour, plain flour in, you do it up, you put some milk in, you put some cheese in that. You boil some pasta, you put it all in a dish, you put some more cheese over the top, and you oven or grill it. That's macaroni cheese. Everything else is fine. Again, I'm with you.
What makes it great is nice creamy sauce and like some strong cheese. Make it nice and strongly cheesy.
Well, I do put a bit of garlic, a bit of mustard in, but you don't taste the mustard. It's to bring out the cheese.
No, flavor enhancer.
Nutmeg. Yeah, I mean, was actually what I was looking for, but I couldn't find any. So.
So,
one more story before we get on finished food. It's quite asked about food. One other thing is I had some garlic bread with that last night as well. Now, I was going to make fresh bread, fresh French bread, and then, you know, cut it, put some garlic and butter on top and toast it. But the yeast let me down. So don't buy Allinson's tubs of yeast or shit. It's a complete lottery as to whether you get a whole tub of dead yeast or not. Anyway, that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is I had to go and get like shop-bought part-baked French bread and then cut them up and put like the garlic and the butter on. And I did that. Now, I went for a shower just before my guest was arriving. And so I went and had a shower and come out, blah, blah, blah. Went back to the kitchen. Now, before I went in the shower, I had the presence of mind to put the macaroni cheese, which was by now in the dish ready to be put in the oven, in the cold oven. But I forgot to put the tray with the garlic bread away. I came back and there was two or three slices missing. Peanut has helped himself. He just, and he was like so sneaky about it. He's just like,
do they like garlic?
Apparently. He does love it. I mean, onion's not good for them, for dogs. So I don't know about garlic, but I mean, he's not been ill or anything. So, but it's like, I forgot to put it in.
Peanut. that's like those old cartoons where they're just like, peanut.
Yeah, so that was my food extravaganza story for you.
Peanut and the polar bear.
Peanut and the polar bear. Well, somebody said that sounds like a crime fighting duo or something.
So where do you stand on like vegan sausages? Because there's a lot of people that say we shouldn't call them sausages.
No, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. So because in a sausage, I do have a thing about sausages, a reverse snobbery with sausages. If you're making a gourmet sausage with like nice cuts of meat, that's not a fucking sausage. That's a ruined steak or whatever. The whole point of sausages is it's the fucking testicles and the larynx.
it's the nails and stuff.
Turned into something delicious. That's the whole fucking point of sausages. So you want like the rusk and fucking entrail sausages. That's a sausage. And replacing the meat with something vegan, fine. Yeah, totally.
Okay, because like proper sausages aren't all meat anyway. Some there's some bone eyeballs and stuff.
Rusk or bread or
have all the usual bits.
Sawdust, exactly.
Whatever falls into the industrial mixing machine.
It's a different kind of sausage, but you can't beat a chip shop sausage. Fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I like what they're made of, but delicious.
They haven't made a vegan version of that works.
No, I don't know. It's like a meat foam of some sort. Like, I don't know what the fuck it is.
Yeah, actually, when the vegan stuff, they try and recreate it. They try and recreate, like, the gourmet version of stuff. Except with one exception, and this actually works really well, is the canned hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can get vegan canned hot dogs, people I know who eat meat prefer them because you don't get the gristle in them. Like if you're eating a hot dog and you like chew down on a bit of gristle, that hot dog's ruined for you.
Yeah, I like a smooth hot dog. I like it to be very well minced.
yeah. So the having no bones in it effectively is kind of a
I love a tinned hot dog sausage. And like we were talking about the other day, the sausages in beans and sausages.
Oh yeah.
Like, they're not a sausage.
They're a hot dog sausage.
Okay,
sausage.
All right. Okay, going back to the pedantry of food, is it beans on toast when you've got sausage in the beans?
And
beans
on toast. Yeah.
Beans what about sausage like? I mean, I make magic beans. Which is, we start with a little bit of butter melted in the bottom of the pot, tin of baked beans, maybe some spices, garlic, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I like adding onions and...
sometimes.
I like chili and baked beans.
I will do chili and stuff, yeah.
That's fucking great.
Oh man, I loved it when you told me about that time when you cut open a jack of potato and mash it up a bit. You do a jacket potato in the microwave. You mash, you sort of break it up a bit, and then you add the canned chili.
Cheaper canned chili. Sometimes a can of beans on top of that, and then a shit ton of cheese on top of that, and just microwave it, and it's just like it's delicious gloop.
And it's such a bachelor meal. That's
it's great. It's great. Yeah. all my meals are. But yeah,
have you ever made that for a woman? And would you consider it?
No. I wouldn't not. Like, the kind of woman who will be who's going to date me is going to have very low expectations.
Right. Anyway, should we talk about this expansion?
At that point, she's blumming it. So, you know.
Yeah, the expanse, that's it, yeah.
All right. Because, well, see, can we knock out the bit that I didn't like about this episode?
Oh, yeah, go on. Go for it.
The Avasarala scene. Oh, hang on a minute. I need my little reference board of pronunciation.
Hang on, was the meeting with Avasarala and Jimmy's mum?
Yes.
You don't like that?
I don't like that. That made me feel feelings I didn't like.
Oh, feelings.
Come
on. Okay, so I think I will not like this for the same reason that you kind of like it, because Avasarala... Am I saying that right?
Yes. Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. Is making, she's just so manipulative in this one.
Sure
is. Oh, she is, but like, she knows she's up against an intelligent woman. I mean, first of all, she is acting on Jim's behalf there. Like, she's not being an asshole. She is she's trying to help. I'm going to call him Jim.
Jim and like, Jimmy is.
Yeah, she's up against a very intelligent woman, so I'm okay with her. You know,
played by the amazing Frances Fisher, worth pointing out.
And the acting, both of them, like the acting in those scenes.
See, I don't know about the acting, because I think what they're doing is what they're intending to do, right?
Mm.
But I don't know. Like, I'm okay. I just kind of feel like, I don't know. Like, they were. I mean, obviously, they're like kind of. I feel like they were bullshitting each other a little bit. Like, they were sparring.
Yeah, that seems fair. Yeah.
And like, Avasarala using her son's death as a little bit of a token in this, you know, battle or something.
Well, that's
you know
the point where it turns around, because they're bullshitting, they're sparring with each other. Then that's the point where it turns around and they're talking to each other like mother to mother.
Yeah,
and, like,
I think so. Yeah,
rude mother to mother. And I don't think she brings it up cheaply. I think she brings it up just to demonstrate to Jim's mother, like, I understand. Like, I understand how you're feeling.
Yeah, they both sort of... Yeah, because Mrs. Holden? Whatever. I know her name's Holden. That's the only way I know for sure. But Holden's mum, she does sort of soften a little bit to that, but not in a sort of you've caught me out way. You know, she's like, "Oh, right, this bit is real. You know, no matter what else has happened, this is true." She's talking about that. Yeah.
And then the irony at the end when Avasarala's walking out and she gets the message from dude whose name we can't remember, saying like, "Oh, we've decided we're going to kill Jim," and she looks back.
I mean, I bought her sincerity. I find it kind of strange that, like, she Avasarala wanted, like, to know about him as his person. That I don't know. That kind of, in some way, kind of feels a little bit like. So she was basically going to that house, that farm. We learn, obviously, like we that's an avenue for us to learn a little bit more about James's origin, maybe where his loyalties might or might not lie, and it just adds a bit of. Oh, but side note, what I did like about it, and this is a big plus in its favor that I didn't realize I should be given credit for, it's not a flashback.
It's not a flashback.
No. It's not a flashback. They're actually telling.
It's a live visit. Yeah.
Yeah, they're giving context and personal, like.
That makes me nervous, because in a couple of episodes we're gonna have like the mother of all flashbacks. You're gonna have like a substantial flashback, and I'm wondering how you're gonna feel about that.
I think
it serves the story though.
No, I do.
It's not a zero tolerance stance I have on flashbacks, but but it's like I consider it to be like a bit of a cop out in terms of storytelling. If you can just flash back and forward in time,
it can be. Yeah, no, I think it can be.
But I think the way this one works is it sort of puts all the pieces together at the end of the series.
Let's just wait. I'm not clear on what you don't like about this meeting, really.
What do you don't like?
I was going to say, it's just a bunch of talking. I just guess I feel a little bit so one of the things we learned about
Abbas Forever. Is it because there's two women talking as mothers?
Oh my God, no.
Have you got, no, no. I mean, no, I didn't mean that you're offended, but I did a little bit just to wind you up, but no, what I mean is it because you don't...
Chinese.
Yeah. Is it because you've got no frame of reference, really? Because like they're both older women, they're both parents. You know, is it kind of a you can't get yourself in there? Or...
It feels
if you had kids.
Yeah,
I didn't mean exactly that. But you know.
I think you sort of touch on it a little bit, which is a bit like it's like they're having this conversation, they butt up against each other, and then Abbas Forever says, "But I'm a mother too." Achievement unlocked.
They didn't just pull that out of nowhere. They have mentioned it in the series already.
And in the previous thing,
they mention it.
In this scene or this group of scenes defense, there's a couple of bits that I find clever about it. Aside from the dialogue and what they're saying, is the first sort of part of the meeting where Jimmy's mum realizes she's dancing, or she's not saying Jim's dead.
And
Jimmy's alive. And then it cuts to Jim in extreme danger.
Yes.
There's a nice irony to that. And then later on, they do almost the same trick where I've made notes. His mom says Jimmy hasn't found his place yet, but at least he's free. And then it cuts again.
So he's been captured.
And, like that's not to undercut what she's saying. Like she means it, and he is free now. He is, you know, master of his own destiny and understands his place now. But also, he's in great peril, and it's a nice.
Yeah, but I think that's that's one of the things where like if. I almost feel like, okay, you know, if I was in that circumstance, surely, and you know, these are women empathizing with each other, right? I feel like withholding the Jimmy might be still alive card is kind of very cruel.
I don't think she withholds it. I think
she dances around it so
much.
Right.
I think that's more she doesn't really know what's going on. She doesn't want to say, your son's alive, great news, and then he dies, like, because she doesn't know.
There's a few things to remember from this. She knows she's fairly sure. No, does she know? No, she does know, I think, that he survived. Oh, yeah, she does know he survived the Dowager because of the spy.
Spy, yeah. But she doesn't know. She doesn't know whether he's her. He is her enemy at this point.
Yeah.
She might have to kill him. So she's not going to say, your son's alive, I want to learn about him. Oh, he's my enemy, I need to kill him.
Yeah, and also, there's two other points to remember is that he's a long way away, and she's come to this meeting, you know, after her last intelligence download or whatever. And also, because of that, the time delay and everything, there could be a lot of things can happen in between, and it takes a while to get the information because of the time delay. So,
yeah.
You know, I think you're right to some extent that she has a wee bit.
There's one little bit within that that I don't really like. Because it's too on the nose sci-fi-y when she touches the books and goes, real books? Are they empty?
That was a bit weird.
Didn't need to do that.
He didn't need that.
That felt like it was for the audience rather than part of the conversation.
And also, book it was. The book it is and the discussion about the book is important.
Yeah, if you'd just gone, Don Quixote, like blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah. Oh, because you mentioned that last
episode. Of course, the episode is called Windmills, which is... Don Quixote lived in a fantasy world and thought the windmills were giants and would, you know, charge at them with his lance.
Okay, because so. they have the windmills on the farm. They're farming wind, or
that's also true. That's interesting. Oh God, yeah, he grew up reading Don Quixote and seeing those huge windmills. I didn't put that together. That's cool.
Okay, yeah, that probably. And then does that sort of metaphor with him joining the Navy? As in, like, being a knight? It's a bit like...
That works. I like that.
Okay. But, yeah, I suppose the you've got the analog Kindle, I see.
You still use a non-transparent screen.
Oh God, yeah, if only.
Yeah. Although when Adam Jensen hacked into the, or not hacked into, when was trying to get into the ship, I did notice they have some non-transparent screens, but I'm pretty sure
they're just in front of
black control panels that are straight on the wall.
Yeah, they're on the wall. Yeah. So you, yeah. I think they're probably still transparent.
Well,
before we get away from the, just briefly, the Avicerella and Jimmy's mum meeting. Part of the context there is like she's essentially part of like a radical faction that is very anti-government and spends their time trying to, you know, contest things with the government. So like there's not necessarily animosity, but there's tension or whatever.
I just scanned out to a shot. I'll put it on the background. You don't see it very much, but there's loads of windmills up there.
Yeah. Have you noticed in the... Actually, I don't know if we've had it yet.
Also, I want to know, but this is a side note, how much fuel it took for that, like, VTOL to, like, just stay just there for around, the duration.
Yeah.
It's fine, like, they've got fusion. Doesn't matter.
But it's so is that going to be a fusion... Is that going to be an electric Harrier jump jet?
Well, or has a little fusion engine. I mean, as soon as you've got fusion, you know, and you've nailed it to the point where you can put it in ships and stuff, presumably you're going to use that for absolutely everything, because why wouldn't you?
I mean, I suppose
Mr.
so.
Mr. Fusion. What's that, Back to the Future?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking it was Fallout. Oh, but yeah, it's Back to the Future, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is kind of Fallout-y, though. Mm. But it's the fact that she's, like, wearing a, like, Little Red Riding Hood...
There's a bit of imagery in that opening shot, isn't there, for walking along?
It's also just like aesthetically very striking when she's walking.
Yeah, it's very arty.
It looks very cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, on TV, like, yeah, like she's contrasting, whereas, like, I don't know, Miller is like blending into a lot of his scenes.
Mm.
But because, like, oh my God, I can't even remember. Like,
can I just go back a wee bit? But... So is what you don't like about that scene her manipulation of the mother? Is that what you're saying?
I suppose yes. In a one word nutshell, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
You said it made you feel feelings. What were the feelings? What were the emotions?
Oh, how do you feel? if she came into my house, I would have a lot less time for her, I guess. If you're going to fuck around and not tell me what you know about,
the thing is, I mean, she's very. I mean, it's essentially like if the Queen walked into your house. Like, we're not monarchists, but you can't just be like, fuck off. I mean, maybe I don't know. There's a bit of like, oh fuck, this is a person of significance.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I'm totally not a monarchist, but yeah, if somebody like came in, I'd be like, kind of like, you know, you'd feel a little bit
like this is interesting enough that
they could have you killed.
But this is undersecretary to a deputy, right?
Yeah, but she's. It's implied that she's.
No, she's the deputy undersecretary.
Yeah,
and so that bloke, whose name we can never remember, is the undersecretary.
So yeah, the secretary is at the top.
Yeah, have we seen him yet in this? Have we had any of those big board meetings in this series yet?
No, we've had him briefly.
One, yeah, so you see him briefly.
Yeah, but I think it's implied that everybody kind of knows she's a bit of a, what's Blair's spin doctor called?
Oh, I keep wanting to say Mandelson.
Alistair Campbell.
Campbell, Malcolm Tucker, sorry.
These two are the figureheads, but she's the one really running things. I think that is implied.
Yeah, Avicerella is the real...
It's not like the American president or something, because this is the whole fucking world. Like, she is the third in charge of the entire fucking planet, you know?
And the moon, don't forget, and the satellites, stations and everything, so it's...
And the
stations.
Well, yeah, Luna, the moon, and the stations. Yeah, you've seen a shot in this series already of a, like, sort of, there's like a sort of series of, I don't know what you want to call them, truck stops or whatever in space on the way to the moon as well. You know, there's all that stuff. And defensive stations and all sorts. Yeah, you just see a little glimpse of it all. Yeah. They don't have part of anything yet, but... You see it all because they talk about things like the defences of Earth and.
Yeah, I'm actually just like scanning through this episode, and there's not that much of it dedicated to that conversation.
So yeah, the meat of the episode is what's happening on the Rocinante, right? Like that's the meat, and then there's some Avicerola stuff and some Miller stuff. Yeah. I've got some nice pretentious shit to talk about the Miller stuff when we get to it.
Well, I was going to suggest just from that point of view that the Rocinante is the big thing. Why don't we move on to the next smaller thing? Miller.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll have our sandwich with the bread on two breads on one side and then all the filling on the back.
That's how we like our sandwiches, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but bread stuff.
I had a burger yesterday, like a Beyond Burger. And I had the audacity to eat it with a knife and fork, and I fucking
I don't
regret a thing. Yeah,
my dad would eat burgers with a knife and fork, pizza with a knife and fork, and when he ate like spaghetti bolognese or something, he would get his knife and like cut it all up into like tiny little pieces.
Oh wow!
Like,
no, I was about to go. I was about to make a confession myself there, but the cutting the pasta up. Oh no, that's too. That's wrong. That's beyond the pale. No, I do cut certain some burgers are just too messy. Like chip shop burgers tend to be really,
or the ones where they have to skewer it in because it's ridiculously tall.
No, you've got to get like any food that you eat with your hands tastes like 30% better because you're eating it with your hands.
That's just the extra flavor on your hands, Drew.
Itch my balls.
Oh my god. I don't get me wrong, like I expect pushback on that kind of thing. I expect that's gonna be what the comments in the video. same thing with pizza is, you know, like
you guys are really fucking designed to be. I'm doing Italian gestures now.
You got to eat the pizza.
Designed to be eaten with your fucking hands. That's
I don't. The thing is, right? Your hands are disgusting. Not your hands in particular. Just hands are you know.
I wash my hands before I eat, though.
Oh yeah, I mean definitely, but like even still, you know, you're only washing them, right? No. You're not.
We're monkeys. We're fine.
Yeah, we're monkeys that have used tools. Like this is the height we are regressing by eating
for the right thing.
And these are tools of a sort, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
but I'm somewhere in the middle of the two of you.
So, well, where do you stand on pizza, Hamish? Because that's the more like.
Well, if it's a pizza that I've made at home. And I've got a guest. Usually if I've got a guest, I'll be polite and eat it with a knife and fork. But that's not. No, I know. But
I'm gone.
But if I get a pizza from a takeaway, like I'm just gonna.
I do the libretto thing where you take the two corners, you fold it up so it's almost like a taco, and then you know.
That's a sort of American. You see them doing that.
Really big ones.
The New York style, like very thin, very greasy, floppy pizza. Like, that's perfect pizza for me.
Yeah
but, I mean, I like those ones. Like, yeah. I love the thin base. In fact, that's the thing. They are kind of messy to eat with your hands. If you had the Chicago style pizza.
You can wash
pizza,
your fucking hands.
you can, but.
Wear a dark top like Drew is so that it doesn't show up and you're fine. That means it's always clean.
When it gets rigid, change it.
Yeah. When you have to crack it. Well, you can crack it a couple of times before you need to change it.
Crack it right up.
Yeah. Oh my god. I'm getting Lister from Red Dwarf vibes from that.
Anyway, if you want to talk about Miller or you want to talk about the Rocinante, I'm fine with either.
Can I get my pretentious shit about Miller?
Okay, let's go
way?
Miller then. Yep.
Because I think first of all, there's the bird. The bird is incredibly fucking important.
And also, which I'm assuming I'm going to be stating the obvious here, but the bird goes. I don't know if I should do it. And then it's Flappy Bird. It's like Flappy Bird, and it's because I'm presuming. That the low gravity is the reason why it's doing
that's
that.
That's why the bird behaves differently. Yeah,
and I'm assuming that now this is gravity versus there's a gravity and wind resistance thing that they're doing here, right? Because because like with a bird, right, that obviously flaps its wings up and down, if it was air resistance and it was flapping that way, it would sort of, would it go up and down like that?
Well,
whereas in also, low G, it would go.
Yeah, but there's also the centripetal force.
Oh, of course.
So they work together. Okay. It's not in isolation. So yeah, you do have air resistance, which you wouldn't have on, like, say, the moon or whatever.
Yeah.
Of course, bird would die because it couldn't breathe. I mean, but that's not the point.
Same as on Earth. They've got air, they've got gravity. It's just lower gravity, so the bird can fly without flapping as much, and just sort of...
Probably slightly thinner atmosphere as well.
Yeah, probably. But, no, okay, so the bird... So this is the point to me. I don't think this is spoilery. This is the point at which Miller starts to gain his, like, saintly accoutrement. And the bird is his symbol, and the bird... The other time when the bird showed up is just before his chief gives him the Julie Mao case. Mm-hmm. And then he's losing his mind because he doesn't know where to go with the Julie Mao case. The bird shows up, he looks at the bird, and then he gets that call from Semi to go to Eros. Mm-hmm. That puts him... So the bird is like a marker of getting him on the track, getting him to follow his, you know, destiny. I'm not saying it's literally destiny, but getting him to follow his destiny. The bird is an important symbol there. And also... So he decides to leave, essentially. And before he leaves, he literally hangs up his hat, right?
Yes. And his
hat is the symbol of kind of him wanting to be an Earther. Him.
It's kind of resistance to
his nature, to what he is.
Yeah, yeah.
Because wearing a hat in on series? Yeah, that's where he is. Wearing a hat in series is like... like, he doesn't need to, they don't need to wear hats there, right? There's no, like,
it keeps the rain off my head. And then a few episodes later, when he's talking to the belted dock workers, I think the docker refers to his hat as like Earther hat. Why'd you wear that Earther hat? So the hat is definitely, it's also a detective thing. So he's saying, like, because I mean, he's a belter, but like, he grew up poor, and he looks at Earthers' lives, and he wants to be an Earther just because he wants a nicer life. So he's identified to some degree with the Earthers. He's a cop. He's sided with the cops, and him taking the hat off and putting it on the peg, that's him saying, I'm no longer a cop. I'm no longer on Earth side. I am. It's him becoming a belter, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Hanging up his hat, literally.
From that point on, he's a belter now. He is
he's
accepted what he is.
Yeah. Also, because it follows on from him just having been fired, when he's in the sort of, I don't know what you want to call it, a subway car thing, whatever those things are called. When he's in that sort of subway thing, he's also saying, "I used to be good at this," and he goes over
like questioningly, like, I swear there was a time when I was good at this.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, that's right. So he's kind of like, he's definitely parting with quite a lot in that episode. He's drawn a line and he's decided to cross it.
He gets Julie Mao's. I assume it's a necklace, but
yeah, it's a necklace thing.
It's prayer beads to him. We see at the end, it's like a rosary or Buddhist prayer beads. There's something kind of spiritual happening with him.
That's as close as he gets to being spiritual, I think.
Is he sort of deciphering the thought that he's the one they give cases to when they don't want to be solved? So he's thinking, I thought I was good at this because I was respected, or because I was like taken.
I think this is reading between the lines.
And this is the thing where he's trying to send a message to Julie Mao's father as well, isn't it?
Yeah. But you know, because it's based on a film noir thing, I believe he was probably good at his job back in the day. I don't think him being shit now and them giving him the cases that they don't want solving is because of his competence. It's because he's lazy. He's become lazy. He doesn't care.
Yeah, he's lost his mojo for whatever. Mm.
Yeah.
I don't know what the young people would say there, of course, but
Got his Riz back.
Got his Riz back. So yeah, I mean, the thing on the station was very the thing that takes the Elon Musk taxi, taking him to the docks, because I thought that was a train, and then he says, "Take me to the docks." Is that like a train that you can you know? Punch,
I think it's, like, it's sort of a semi-intelligent you're at your destination type thing. It is, it is on a tunnel, like, so you know,
it's not like even... the turbo lifts in TNG, but like not as advanced. Kind of like it, you know, there are tubes that go all around the station, and you can, if you're on your own, I guess you can go take me here.
Oh, like a lift. Oh, it's like a
multi-dimensional lift.
I'm not sure. I think it's just the case of he was at his destination and they were saying, right, here's where you got off, because this is where you asked him to take, asked for when you got on. I thought it was just
I read it the same as Chris. I thought he's like, take me to the docks.
He does,
like,
say take me to the docks, but I think that's just the sort of, right, no, I don't want to go off here. I want to go off at the next stop or a,
like, bus like he's telling the bus driver, as it were.
He's
just telling, or the train driver, you know, he's like, no, it's okay, I don't need to go off here, because it sort of waits for him.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
But then, you know, then how long can somebody hold the carriage or whatever as well, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's got a weird schedule or something, so sometimes a day it's busy with other people. Maybe it acts differently with just one passenger in the carriage.
Gosh. Yeah, that's
I think we're overthinking this now.
Well, the thing is, if it was a bus, then wouldn't he be talking to a driver rather than just a telecom? I mean, is it AI? Maybe.
It's going to be automated for sure. Yeah, there's nobody controlling that. Yeah.
Yeah,
but it does go through. I mean, you see it going through tunnels.
I mean, it's a tube train, but I think it's a tube train that can go different ways if it needs to.
Okay, I'd have to pay more attention to the CGI bits for that to make a decision.
Is there going to be like a wiki page on it?
But don't look at the wikis yet, because it's got all those. This person died in series 3, and this person does this amazing thing that changes everything. You know, don't look at the wiki.
With any other show, or not with most shows, I wouldn't give a shit about spoilers. Like, if somebody dies, you're fine now. Like, fine. But there's so many intersecting stories in this and surprises to come that, like, it would just, it would just kind of not ruin it, but diminish it.
So is Miller like this? What I was getting from Miller in this episode was that he was kind of becoming like, what does Dawes say about it? Because it obviously goes in and starts to punch up with Dawes, but
it doesn't start to punch up with Dawes. He hits some of these people in the bar.
So this bar is like the OPA. Attention. The OPA, like, gang bar where all the cool OPA people get to hang out. And I love, Miller starts talking about, Dawes says, like, I'm working for you. You don't realize it, but I'm working for you. And Miller says, when I was dying in that airlock, I thought you were working for me. And Miller goes into politician mode and says, you were thinking about me in your last moments. I'm honored. Like, but then goes on to say something more important. Like,
Dawes goes into politician mode.
Maybe you've got more to live for, kind of thing. I think he actually affects Miller there. He says, maybe there's more to your story, essentially. So, and then Miller leaves and decides to, the bird comes and tells him what to do. And
Dawes doesn't seem massively surprised that he's still alive either. But then again, he probably got the news that two of his guys were killed and Miller got away. But he doesn't sort of turn around and say, right, you guys just throw him out, right, 10 of you go throw him out an airlock now. So it's interesting that he sort of gives them the chance.
And I think he ends with, like, I can't remember the words, but, like, you know, when you find your way home, we'll be here for you, kind of thing. He says something, and that means
along
genuine.
Those lines,
So he... Because it would have been interesting, because could have gone the other way, where it's like, well, you're not a cop anymore, so you're not useful to me.
Yeah, it could have done, but I think what happens is, I think partly what Drew was saying there, it just clicked in my head there. If you combine the way Dawes treats him with his own spiritual awakening or whatever, or coming, you know, he's like, he sees that he's a belter again. I think that's what, that's probably something Dawes sees in him,
Yeah, because at that point, Miller's losing his mind, because he's been on this trail with Julie Mao. He's fallen in love with her. Something's happening there. And this is the first point where he's really hit a complete dead end. He's, you know, been taken off the case. His stuff has been, and he smashes up.
Yeah, he smashes up the place looking for a copy of the evidence, which, you know,
he's desperate for a path, and he doesn't have a path. And then he goes into the bar and And Dawes says, maybe your story's not over. Maybe there's more to your path. And then he goes back, sees the bird, gets the call, and he's like, okay, I'm back on track. Like, and I'm a belter now.
Oh, yeah, a little bit of a, it's not an aside because it's to do with this, but it is just to clarify what he does. You know, he cashes in.
Yes.
And in case, did you get that, Chris? Were you clear what that was?
So he grabs the, it's not chips.
That's it. They use chips as a sort of de facto currency. But when they want to get to go anywhere else, they have to get, you know, whatever exchange. Earth, Mars type
space
money.
Space bucks.
So he has to, so it's to cash in all his chips. And
which reinforced something we said a long time ago, like company town, essentially. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And now, whose chips are they? Are they his or Julie Mao's?
I think he's gathered them from a few places.
But if Julie Mao had any, he would have taken them. Yeah. When he goes to cash out, because you get the impression like he lives quite cheaply.
Mm.
Like he get, you know, he's paid as a cop, which is a decent salary, and he lives quite cheaply. So he's just like all the money, because he didn't give a shit about money, because what use has he got for money as long as he can eat and do his work? So yeah, he gathers all his money up, which is quite some savings, is the implication, I think.
So we learn. Oh, I do have a theory.
I love a theory.
Right. So you know my sort of my disproven theory about the scopuli still being alive, as it were, or still operational. Yeah.
No, you thought it was destroyed, didn't you?
No. I forgot that it was the scopuli was the first ship. The abandoned one that they found the Mars tech on.
That's it.
Yeah. So you thought that in the show the scopuli was implied to have been destroyed, but then you thought yourself that it hadn't been destroyed and was still operational.
Yes, that was the
old. Oh, right. Yeah. Right. Okay.
And my possible new theory is that the scopuli is still alive. I'm just going to use the term "alive" as in like to mean functional or whatever. But the ship that they find in the beginning in episode one might be like the Anubis or Anubis.
Well, no, it's specifically stated to be the scopuli. Again, yes. I hate to be on.
Wrong. That could be. It could be in disguise.
Oh, you
or
mean
something.
A disguise, right? Okay,
yeah, well, yeah, like a bait and switch. I mean, obviously, it's not, judging from your reaction.
No, I meant because, like, when you thought it had been destroyed, you thought that they, the in universe, it had been destroyed, but we had no evidence of that at all. That's I'm getting confused as to what you're thinking of the scopuli.
Right, okay.
I think.
Okay.
But the scopuli is the one that they get the distress call. They go to the scopuli. As far as we're aware, as viewers, okay, something could have happened. You know, Fred could have sent someone out, Dawes could have sent someone for it. But as far as we're aware as viewers, it's just sitting next to an asteroid.
Okay.
Next to the debris of the the Canterbury.
Well, I'm going to jettison that theory based on the reaction alone.
I wouldn't judge too much because if you're onto something that we'd prefer for you to like be surprised by, we're going to misdirect probably.
Yeah, but Hamish ain't that good an actor. Like, it's just
he's a pretty good actor because I thought his name was Hamish for the last like 15 years or whatever.
Well, if it turns out that ship that we saw at the beginning was not the scopuli, in some sort of bait and switch, thing, then you've won, all right, Hamish, you've won.
No, I'm not trying. No, I just think you got confused as to which ship was which.
Yes,
it's not about what I'm not trying to shoot down your theories. I'm just trying to say that in the show we have seen. This has nothing to do with the future. Or any of the confusion. It's to do with that ship that ship we saw, that was the scopuli. And we've never seen it since the Canterbury incident. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it can't be another ship in disguise. I'm not saying it's not been renamed or blown up, or I'm just saying what we know as viewers is just that. That's all we know about it.
Okay.
Whereas you seem to be picking it up as if it, I think you're getting confused between that and another ship, or that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying one thing or another about where the scopuli is now, because in the show right now, that's the last time we saw it. We've talked about it a lot, but that's the last time we had any interaction with it as viewers. That's all I'm saying. That's the only thing I'm saying, and I will shut up and let you go on.
Okay. Well, I mean, because obviously the Anubis is important here, and the Anubis, like, was it 1B or something? The
shuttle, yeah, Anubis 1A or something, yeah.
The skiff was still, like, ticking up the docker fees. So that and through that he gets directed to Eros, and then that's where he's on what looks like a public shuttle to
Eros. It's an airliner,
analog,
like a budget, like, you know, Ryanair.
So he's not flying this this Anubis 1B or whatever it's called.
No, that's on Eros. That's on Eros.
That is, yeah, okay. But that might be, because the thing is, right, if we were to assume everything at face value, we would assume that Julie Mao would have died in the Scopuli incident, right? That would be the sort of the base level of assumptions that we could be making, right? Now, obviously, that's not the case. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a story. Well, I mean, it could be the case that So there's more to this. That's why there's a story, right? It's not just going to be, and Miller chases around this person that's actually dead, the end, right? Like, there's obviously going to be something here, right? Right? There's this point to this story, right?
The aliens swoop in from another galaxy and destroy the solar system in episode 9, I'm afraid.
Is that that's Mass Effect 3?
Then it's the Muppets crossover.
Yeah.
Season 3.
I like the Muppets.
that's a little soundbite I'm going to have to grab. I like the Muppets.
Yeah, I like their the Christmas Carol. It's
good film. Good version of Christmas Carol.
I mean they chop it and change it, but I don't think Dickens is particularly sacred. So
I think Dickens is crap, actually.
Yeah,
he's got good ideas and good stories that get made into good adaptations. Personally, that's where I go with it. I don't think he's writing.
I've only ever liked Christmas Carol of his. About everything that I've read and watched, not particularly.
Yeah, I can't stand reading them.
Although, to be fair, didn't he write in newspaper serials? Isn't that like a lot of what he wrote?
Sherlock Holmes dude, rather than
Conan Doyle.
Conan Doyle did, yeah, definitely. So did a lot of people in this. That happened right up until probably in the 30s and 40s as well. People were serialising their stories. In fact, if you think back far enough to the 80s, they were serialising the Hitler diaries in the Daily Mail or the News of the World or whatever it was.
Jesus.
That was so funny.
Well, you know.
Sorry, carry on.
Now Boris Johnson writes for the Daily Mail, but you know, doesn't he have? Is that the one where he got his column?
I don't know.
Like going from the Spectator to the fucking Daily Mail—that's a bit of a downfall.
Well, he lost his job for lying. So anyway, let's not get talking about.
Okay. So the characters in the story are converging on Eros.
That was your point. Sorry, I'd kind of been too busy making an aside message somewhere else for something. And then that was really rude of me not paying full attention.
It's okay, Hamish, you're forgiven. So you got Lionel Polansky, you got Julie Mao, who I'm going to, on the assumption, assume that she's still alive, but I've played enough video games to know that, like, you can chase after someone and then, like, find out they're dead. So, but then there's like a reason for that, or that leads on to something else, right? So, you know, so obviously, I hope. I would like to see Eros in the next episode if we do, maybe. I don't see why we wouldn't, because everyone seems to be heading there. Is this going to be a Miller...
Can I just give you a little nudge there? Again, it's not so much... it's not about story, it's just about facts. The Ross and Anti-Crew aren't headed to Eros. That's where they said they're going.
Oh.
They're going to an asteroid, BG something, 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 which is the last reported position of Lionel Polansky, I believe.
Oh, yeah. I thought Lionel Polansky was on... Oh, so, but there's... is it Shed? Alex is...
Shed's dead, baby. Shed's dead.
Alex... says that they're going to Eros. Is that right?
Oh yeah, that's the flight plan they've laid in. That's the cover plan. Yeah.
So well, it's like,
when Semi calls Miller, does Semi say anything about who was the pilot of the shuttle that was in Eros?
I didn't register anything.
No, I don't think he does. He just says the shuttle's here, racking up dock fees.
Oh, so Julie Mao was on series all along, and then she...
No, this is in this is on Eros.
No, I'm joking. The Eros is in. I mean, did
see? I'm not correcting this. I'm not trying to mess with your theories. I'm just correcting the geography for you. That's all.
So it's racking up docker fees on series. Yes,
no,
that's what
Eros.
Yeah,
the shuttle is on Eros. He calls his friend on Eros.
Right.
Miller's heading to Eros. The Ross and Ante have said they're going to Eros, but they're going to an asteroid.
Which I'm assuming is near Eros. Because
well,
otherwise...
Well, it has to be fairly close, I suppose, because well, in space terms, because...
Yeah,
they're
going to go...
Otherwise,
and
the flight plan
go,
would look completely insane.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm assuming that they're gonna do, like, we're going to Eros, and then just, like, duck out at the last minute. And they'll probably put on their stealth shield. I'm assuming they've got some sort of stealth technology.
No. Stealth technology. We've already established stealth technology is super expensive and super rare.
But then so is their ship. So
yeah, I mean they do say multiple times only Mars has stealth.
Fair point. Yeah, so but they don't mention. Yeah. No, I mean every ship we see with stealth
technology is pure black. Okay, yeah. When I say stealth, I mean like radar jamming or something like that. Could there be? All right, I'm fine. No, okay, good. They're just okay.
Oh, I feel
so they're
bad
just
for bursting Chris's bubbles.
It's all right. So they donkey balls their way out. Oh, hang on a minute. Sorry, wrong line. Miller.
I think we did Miller. I think we're done with Miller.
I think we're done with Miller. Yeah.
Yeah, because you got him to the taking that EasyJet Ryanair flight to Eros. Yeah.
Do they? Okay. So,
we missed one little bit about Miller, which I think I don't know how important it is, but it shows more and more about what his decision was, and that's the bit where he meets up with the former partner. And she says, "Oh, this is how you say goodbye. You leave a creepy message and then disappear."
Yeah,
so I think she has still has a thing for Miller. But he's like, you know, and she sees him with Julie Mao's necklace and everything, and she's like,
she's basically saying, take me with you, right? And it's like, but she's got a job. She didn't get fired, did she? No,
but she says much earlier in the show that she joined the police on series to piss off her rich father, so she's got the resources to do whatever. If she just wants to up it and leave, she can do that.
So she joined the the pseudo force, the fake cops.
Pseudo force, Miller.
That's
not quite the line, but she says something about having a rich, because Miller goes to her and asks, like, what would
Julie Mao do?
Something about Julie Mao wanting to do things to piss off her father. Well, I just went out to series and screwed every space jock, blah, blah, blah. I'd like to piss off her father.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. All right, cool. All right, okay. So, one of the things I was thinking is, like, Miller's motivations here are not in any way, like, healthy. Like,
No, I don't think you're correct on that assumption, I would say.
And that's not. And that's me lowballing it, right? Because that's kind of like psychotic, really, in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah,
he's became obsessed with her,
He's in love with her. The bird is telling him what to do.
He's completely blind to the opportunity right in front of him, you know.
Yeah, without straying into stuff. The stuff I can talk about when we get into season two, I think. But I think it's reasonable to say at this point, like, he's not necessarily entirely in control.
When you say that, do you mean he's acting on a very emotional, unrational level?
I mean more like some kind of destiny is happening. Something is bigger than him that is... Yeah, I don't want to get too much into that, but...
Okay. I'm just trying to work out, is it like aliens controlling his brain kind of destiny, or is it just kind of like a spiritual destiny?
I mean, it's clearly like it's dressed up in spiritual imagery, I think it's fair to say. And more so in a couple of episodes, you'll see that. But you got the beads already. I don't want to say too much about it.
Okay, yeah.
This is more of a,
that was a big tease, wasn't it?
A little bit like just a sort of theory I have that I did mention to Hamish a bit ago that explains his irrationality at this point.
This is Drew's theory of this bit of the show rather than anything that's been spoiled by mentioning it.
I think it adds up, but yeah.
Yeah, you may have a different take on it when it comes to Big Fun.
Yeah. Okay. But for now, let's say, he's not acting like a sane person. He's in love with this woman. That's kind of makes sense, kind of a bit weird. But
does she have, like, space pheromones or something?
No, we're not spoiling in any sort of technical thing. We're talking about the theory of now.
Okay.
Without any further information, really.
But that is sort of okay. But the fact that, like, the show recognizes that he's acting irrationally, right?
Yeah, I mean, everybody he mentions this to says that. Like, you know, his ex is clearly, you know, you're in love with this girl. You know nothing about over, you know, a flesh and blood beautiful woman here. Like, this is not, you know.
So that's interesting. Right, should we go back to the Rossinanti?
Let's go.
Okay. Right. Hello, Adam Jensen. I think that it's incredibly cruel that they don't let Adam Jensen go to the toilet until the end of the episode.
It is weird. I don't think he mentioned it to Holden until later, though. He only mentioned it to Amos, and Amos was just like,
If that was me in an airlock and I really needed a piss
in the corner.
Piss on the floor, yeah.
But it's the gravity. You'll get the piss come back at you.
Are they on gravity?
No, they're in flight, so they'll have some.
Even if they didn't, like, if you pissed in absolute zero, it would just
globulize.
And then you're spending the rest of the time dodging it.
Well, that's possible, yeah.
Look, honestly, it's worse if it was in a vehicle or something, you know, like an Earth vehicle truck. You could
find some sort of bag or plastic.
How about if he just opened the doors and pissed outside?
Oh, actually, the suit that he was in, does that have like a catheter in it? Do they have?
He's not really in any. He's not in a spacesuit, is he?
He's just got a helmet.
Originally, yeah,
maybe
probably
a pressure suit. Yeah.
Yeah,
but I suppose if those are like just suits that you put on,
yeah, I don't think he's not in like a full space suit. I don't think
you don't pop in a catheter
I think there's no atmosphere in this. I think he's between the holes.
Amos is like suffocates him by.
Is that an Amos suits up to go in and
that's true.
No, yeah. he is. No, it is actually a pressure suit because not really. We'll see him wearing it as a pressure suit later.
Okay.
No, it must be. Yeah.
So, then he might have a catheter in it. Where else?
Yeah, he would have used it though, wouldn't he?
You can definitely piss in the suits, but maybe he's like, I'm gonna save this up.
He does mention
I
something
want to
like
enjoy
that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what happens when he does pee now.
he's having a conversation with
you. He says some things are worth waiting for.
Yeah, it's like, no, I'm thinking, how did you go to the loo? Because now you've got me thinking about the
Zero G.
Is that just out of curiosity, is that a thing people do? Like they wait to go to the toilet so that it's more relieving?
I don't think so. Not unless they want to do themselves a mischief. Because not to get any big details here on a public show, but I've got problems with that sort of thing. It's not something you want to mess with. No.
It's like
I don't think I've ever intentionally done it, but it is when you do go, when you've got one backed up and you do go for it, is, I mean, it's a nice feeling of like, oh, just
it's a relief.
Yeah, but like it's not anything. I'm just like it's. I mean, yeah, I don't even know. I don't even know if I think about it that deeply. If I'm completely honest, it's.
Well, now you do.
The show confronting all aspects.
Well, have you ever had that way? I mean, I don't drink anymore, but have you ever had that way? You drink, you know, you go and you're drinking a few beers, and then you break the seal. You know, that first pee after you've been sitting drinking for a session.
I mean, yeah, I know.
If it's just coffee and stuff, I suppose. Or, you know, if you're sitting having a chat and whatever, and you kind of get caught up in the chat.
Yeah. I definitely had that.
It's more relief though than any kind of. Is it okay? All right. So Drew, you smoke. Do you ever not smoke when you want to, in order for the next cigarette to be even nicer? Because you literally just had three cigarettes during at least three. Like
I'm about to roll another one, but when. When I worked at a Shell petrol station where we could not smoke if the manager was around.
He just happened to throw the cigarette.
When the manager wasn't around, fags on. But so that was like an 8-hour shift and then a cigarette. And that cigarette after an 8-hour shift of not hit, that hits like the first cigarette you ever have, like makes you kind of dizzy and stuff. That's nice.
Yeah. The first cigarette of the day was always something I quite, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it got you ready for the day almost, you know. Yeah. Like when I was at university, I was just like walking in with the first one, you know, maybe with a coffee.
Oh, for me, breakfast is a cup of tea and a couple of cigarettes, which I think is referred to in some quarters as Scottish breakfast.
Okay, anyway, that aside,
No, not that. We haven't got to the bottom of the piss yet.
Oh.
So when he does go, what Hamish is saying, when he does go into the urinal...
Have you got it in front of you, Chris? Can you zip through it?
Do I have to put your dick into it?
Well, in space, they've got like a sort of vacuum thing, haven't they?
Yeah. And I think they've system vacuum that a lot.
I mean, I can't do a CSI. Hang on a minute, I've got to crop it.
You frame by frame.
I got to crop it because it's like okay. So
CSI piss in space.
It's hard to see. It looks almost cleverly, but deliberately obfuscated.
Yeah, but I was wondering if you hear the noise, like a sort of noise or not. You know, hitting the water or anything.
I think you can. Hang on a minute. Let me just unmute.
But the thing is, in all honesty, they probably did it for.
Aesthetic effect
rather than that being something they considered in terms of.
We need to write to the producer, like, why is this not scientifically accurate?
Well, they get asked that about other things, so why not that, you know?
I've got one clip here. Let's see. Virtual background, right. Okay. This one here. Right.
that's
Deus
a face
Ex.
Of relief.
That's the box of Deus Ex.
And he seems to be standing like as if at a urinal, you know.
Yeah, that like it's very as the kids say, urinal coded. But he's making a sound like he's making a sound like
there is a tinkling. Do we hear a tinkling?
Yes, we hear a tinkling. It's
maybe it's a normal urinal when they've got gravity, and then when they don't have gravity, they plug in and release.
It makes a sound effect.
But mind you, if you've got a thing in a urinal,
makes the sound effect.
That'd be cool. You've got a thing in a male bathroom that you plug your dick into when you want to put, like, people are just going to fuck that.
Yeah, you don't want to use it after somebody else.
Be packed up with cum.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming.
Oh, God.
Okay, here's. I'm assuming
that is this the first time in this show? We've done all these episodes, and it's the first time it's got there. I think.
I'm kind of assuming that if that was the case, where you would need a, shall we say, a full connection to the thing, that like you would have a like it'd be like a catheter fitting. So you'd get
own one, and you just plug it into the pipe.
Yeah, you'd have your own one, and it would either
still
stay
though,
in.
It's the whole system. Ooh, oh god!
No, that sounds unpleasant. I think it'd
if anything could come back up the pipe, or, you know, because of the
it'd be like a flesh pipe with a bit of vacuum going on.
Okay, right. This is not cropped ideally, but so like if you can see, like it sort of goes into the darkness. So like it doesn't.
Oh no!
It doesn't.
All I can say is at least it wasn't me that got there first. Thanks, Drew, for taking the bullet.
I mean, it's probably not that far thought ahead, but it's like you walk around with some gear on your junk in space. You're like, you know,
I don't like that idea. That makes me very uncomfortable. We're just permanently having a catheter and having to like, no, that's
and then just plug in.
No.
I mean, it's obviously that's not what he's doing here.
Yeah, I'm not like that.
As I say, without getting too into it, I think they are just doing it for effect. The sort of standing at a urinal thing. I don't think. I don't think they're trying to be scientific about it. And you know, you've got to think about they have both. You know, they've got women and men in space and stuff. You know, so they've got to think about all sorts of.
Oh, it's like they could just use a shiwi.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's just why do that when that's just giving you an extra layer of awkwardness.
Well, for the, when you're in zero G, and
yeah, but you could sit there on the vacuum thing, couldn't
you? Yeah, there could be.
Anyway,
let's not. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
We've also gone too much into this already.
Also, I have kind of noticed there's a screen in front of the urinal there. Is that so you can take phone calls while you're taking a piss or something?
It's probably flush.
On there, like I've not been out in the real world for 20 years, but I've seen pictures of urinals with like advertising screens above them.
Yeah, I get that.
I mean, you've got somebody's undivided attention for 30 seconds. You know, playing a fucking ad, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, presumably when you were outside, you go into like a Wetherspoons. They have like posters in front of the urinals sometimes.
Oh yeah, no, I don't think even that back. Yeah, I don't think so.
Really? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Advertising. I mean, not that it was great in the 90s, but it wasn't anywhere as near as what it looks like now. It's ridiculous now.
Yeah, not most urinals, but like if you go to like a chain of almost anything,
he inspects them all.
Yeah, well, you know, in the newspaper, I often had to report on the who was winning the Lose of the Year award, which is a proper award.
Yeah.
I think that the Donkey Sanctuary in Devon, which I highly recommend visiting, won it for two years.
Wow.
There was a very uncomfortable one in Uttoxeter. There was a public toilet that was just made out of like steel, like rounded, like flat rounded steel. This was the sort of the building that you would go into, open to the weather above, but it had sort of like a gap at the bottom about this big. So, and it was on next to the car park. So when you were taking a shit there, you were just aware that everybody in the car park could see your feet while you were taking a shit.
There's something comfortable about that. Yeah. Something, yeah. What's the word? Vulnerable.
Well, I mean, even a lot of dogs, when they take a shit, like they sort of get nervous and all that kind of thing. They'll piss on everything.
I swear I've seen a clip of like a Japanese TV prank show or something where there's one of they have those like micro toilets, just like one toilet in the street, and like the person would go in and then the walls would turn transparent from the outside. Or something. I swear I've seen that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they have like really. Yeah, they have some really.
Hilarious, isn't it?
Yeah.
Japanese comedy seems to be purely based around humiliating people.
Yeah, there's one. They had on
unreconstructed fascist countries.
I remember one that they were broadcasting over here. It was called drunken businessman where they pulled people in off the street.
I wonder why I haven't had a telly for over 20 years.
And they pulled these people in off the street and they gave them a quiz question and they said, you can call anyone, you can use this telephone to call anyone to find the answer to this question. Whoever finds the answer to the question fastest wins. And it was,
And they were drunk?
They were very drunk. Well, they were so, to be honest, they were so drunk they could barely dial out. It's kind of...
I'm sorry, what's the connection? What's the point?
I have no idea. To urinals.
Chris, can you stop taking us off track into these irrelevancies?
I know, Chris, come on. That's terrible.
Okay. Also, actually, on another tangent, right, do you guys know Adrian Charles? He's got a column in The Guardian that actually, to be fair, is kind of amazing. And because he talks about the most random stuff, like it is just literally they've given him a free column and he just writes. And he wrote one thing and I don't want to like do any kind of like mental health that kind of diagnosis-y kind of thing. Okay. But here's a thinker outside the box, shall we say, right? And he wrote an article that completely convinced me on this one issue, that he had installed into his house a urinal, and he says it was like one of the best things he ever done.
He's got a family?
My immediate response was, I was with you because it's quicker. But it's not because you just, flop it out, take a piss, walk away. But as gentlemen, and ladies can do this as well, there was an extensive Twitter thread that I read. We can just do that on a toilet, just like flop it, piss, walk away. Like there's no, a urinal's not easier, really.
Well, it kind of is.
They're kind of a splash catcher, really, aren't they? They're not.
I mean, there's a splash catcher. They use a lot less water. Like, I mean, I don't know how often you need to flush a urinal, but like you go to a pub now, they don't flush them after every use, right? They'll flush. So there's a water.
Yeah, the American ones have got manual flush, haven't they? The urinals in America.
Yeah, but the American's use of water is beyond questionable, right? Like,
there's the old style like we had at school, like urinals that would occupy like an entire wall, and it was just sort of a pissing, like a trough that you would piss in.
Yeah, the trough
for the splashback protection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that some pubs have like a so you know how a urinal goes like it curves round like around the back.
Mm.
Well, I've noticed that, and I've seen that. First, noticed this in hospitals is that they have like they're kind of like buttock shaped, so they kind of have opposite of a crevice, a peak.
Stop it splashing back.
Yeah, because it just curves it around into the thing. It's like.
But no, this Twitter thread, there's a bunch of women saying, "I've tried pissing standing up, and it totally fucking works. Why do we all sit down to piss?" And I'm fully in support of women pissing standing up.
I guess it must be one of those things that you don't want to fuck around and find out. Right? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no
piss everywhere, but piss is it's not that bad. Piss. Yeah, we splash ourselves now and then, and and then go and eat our pizza.
I knew that was coming back round.
Anyway, slice. Yeah, I mean, I think bidets and urinals are like. That we should start building bathrooms with them.
We should get bidets. Bidets. I've only used one like twice in my life, and it's like, why is this not the fucking norm in this country? Why do we smear a shit around our asshole with fucking paper?
It's savage. It really is. And also, apparently, and I've not seen these in action, and I really want to. Is that sounds weird? Is that you can actually get apparently a fitting that you can install yourself. You don't need to bring in a plumber or
a little shower head type thing.
Like kind well where yeah, yeah you sort of just you flush and
I was thinking of I've only seen them in I don't know if it's a thing from particular countries. I've only seen them in Muslim households when I was younger. There's like just a shower head attachment next to the toilet, and instead of using toilet roll, you just take the shower head attachment and sort of bidet it yourself.
Yeah, that's a lot more. That's like a lot more the done thing in like in India. I mean, in India, it's quite common that you just wash with water.
Anything but just water rather than paper. Like it's disgusting.
Yeah, and also waste of paper. I mean, everyone knows I'm a big fan of bamboo and bamboo related products. And you can get bamboo.
You don't want it in your garden, though.
No, you don't want it in your garden, though. Very invasive.
You like a bamboo King of the Hill dude. What's his name?
Bamboo and bamboo related accessories. But yeah, like it says, and you can get bamboo toilet paper on prescription that is more environmentally friendly than.
Why on prescription?
No, sorry, not prescription, subscription.
All right. Yeah, I was thinking that was a weird thing to get a prescription for. Yeah, you've got a special bum that needs.
Have you encountered my grandparents on one side?
Encountered your grandparents. No.
A kind of toilet paper. It was called medicated toilet paper. I don't know in what way it was medicated, but it was like greaseproof paper.
When I was a kid at school, that was what the toilet paper was like.
Shiny,
greaseproof. And is this?
That's what my grandparents used. Every time we came, like, I'd wait to go home before I'd have a shit.
Yeah. No, I went to a campsite where they had that kind of toilet paper. And this was a long time ago, back when I was a teenager. And we read the reviews online. And this was on a website. This website had its own comment review section, which in hindsight is kind of legendary, because it's like no website. They didn't. That's the thing. Like, they were talking but generally the gist is, you know, when you get like a gist of, like, if there's something wrong with a place, it'll come up in a few comments. And it was like, bring your own toilet paper and it's fine. But we were teenagers, so we didn't.
I remember I was at Reading Festival 1 year, and you know, they got portable toilets around the campsite, right? And I one morning woke up, really needed a shit. Went to the you know, and fucking hungover from the previous night, obviously. Went to the portable toilet, opened the door, and the shit was piled up like above the rim of the toilet, like this, like a mound. Ew. I just closed the door and went in the woods.
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense. I mean,
I'm not gonna deal with that.
Yeah,
more shit related story.
Oh yeah, excellent.
when I was working at Shell petrol station, one of my duties was to clean the toilet, and it was a for everybody toilet, like disabled, like it was a big toilet. And there was a shit in the bowl that I couldn't see the tail end of it under the water. It went all the way down. The near end of it came up over the lip of the toilet.
Oh god, yeah.
It was like a meter long shit.
There's an episode of Still Game like that. It's got mentioned. Oh, really?
I just thought of a great business idea, though. If we could come up with a way to, like, make toilets for festivals,
we need to put a warning on this show. I'll tell you.
Yeah, if we can come up with a design for a toilet that is just not awful to use at a festival, we're minted. Because that's the one thing everyone says about
the bowl.
Mm.
And then you have like the mechanism, and there's a hole here, and you have the mechanism from a strimmer.
You need to be careful.
It just scatters it. So it's going to go
over it or something.
But,
oh yeah, it's going to fly up. Oh no!
Like, I mean, there's got to be like some kind of like
a way to get it round a bit.
Is there a way to like tunnel like maybe a hole about this wide? Really, really quickly and really deeply, right? So you you take out like a really long cookie cutter type.
I mean, it would be really good for the plants if you could just leave it like under the ground for the nutrients for the grass.
Yeah, like I feel like there's an environmentally friendly sort of solution here, like an earth toy, like
I bet if you look it up on the web, there's already some ideas like this, and they probably don't use them because they're not as cheap as the other way.
What did they call them in the old days, where they just dug a latrine? It was just a shit pit, and then cover it back over and go somewhere else. Like, that's probably better.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, your outhouse was like a movable shed, basically. You just
when we moved into this house, it had an outside toilet.
Yeah, a lot of the houses around here, like there's outhouses that have been sort of incorporated into the. You know, they've been extended at one point in time into the buildings. Yeah, but
actually, that's a question. I was going to ask
No, go on. I want to hear this.
No, yeah, now you've said it.
Yeah.
Is okay? Right. You know, when we say America, we mean like post-colonial USA, right? Not post-colonial. Yeah. You know, like. And I was going to ask: Was that before? Was that? Did they have outhouses? Of course, they did have outhouses.
Yeah, but you see them in the old West things, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. But like, it's just, I don't even forget it. I didn't even need to say. I just voluntarily made a.
When we used to visit my grandparents on that side, they had chamber pots under the bed still.
Gazunders.
You wouldn't go to the toilet during the night. If you needed to go either end during the night, you would go in the chamber pot.
I can see number one, but like.
Yeah, I'm not keeping shit under my bed while I'm sleeping. Like,
that's.
You'd add a lid, like an airtight lid, maybe, but. Yeah.
Oh, I'd have to try to get that open in a hurry, though. You'd be as well running to the outhouse.
Yeah.
Well, that's been an interesting aside.
I just want to take this moment to just...
Is there any bodily excretions we have not mentioned yet? We've not mentioned spitting yet. Earworms. Well,
there's still time. But I got to be honest, I just want to shout out indoor plumbing. Amazing.
Running water.
Running water.
It's fucking miraculous, yeah.
Love it, love it.
It'd be nice if the rest of the world had access to it. Well, it'd be nice if they weren't undermining ours and destroying the things either. Yeah.
I just, it's a weird thing because, like, I know there's so much in like, modern life that we take for granted, but I always, like, I don't know what the atheist equivalent of a little thank you prayer is, but, like, every time I flush a toilet, I'm like...
I think as an atheist, you can just say thank you to the universe or humanity.
And because the thing is with indoor plumbing, right? We could so easily... There's so many ways we could have fucked it up, but we didn't. Like, indoor plumbing works during a power cut. That's fucking amazing. I love that.
Yeah,
and also, old landlines, they used to work during a power cut because they were...
Yeah, they're not connected to the mains.
Yeah. So and it's like
until you got your first cordless phone,
yeah.
And then you're no, you can't make a call.
Power can go out and it's awful. The internet can go out and it's awful. But if your water goes out, that's
an emergency.
A few summers ago, the water was off here for a week or two, and they had like a truck that came around that you could fill up from. But I had the genius idea of using mineral water to make my tea, which. Bottled mineral water, cheap bottled mineral water, which was like the first couple of days was okay, but I didn't realize obviously the minerals are building up in the kettle.
Yeah.
And
why is my tea salty? Like, why is it?
Oh, wow. I've never made tea with mineral water before.
One cup, fine. Don't do it. Continue. It's horrible.
I thought the water, did you get the water that was like that they hand out?
Well, there was a truck at the top of the street would come and you went and filled containers like bottles and stuff. And
oh, did you? Oh, when because we had a there was a threat of our water going out, and Welsh Water basically gave everyone, just as a precautionary measure, 2 2-liter bottles of water. It was Welsh Water branded water, or like it wasn't any pretense that it was mineral water. It's literally. What you should get out of the tap, but also
water is mineral water.
Not
mineral rich as some mineral waters, but it has minerals in it. Yeah,
depends on part of the country, you know.
I mean, so tap water is mineral water.
I love the water where I grew up, but the water around here is horrible. I need to use a filter.
Yeah,
it's disgusting.
Down south, the water down south in general is like here, like you can't get a fucking lather up with soap for your life. Like, it takes you about 10 minutes, but like it's so. It's very we're built on top of limestone, so it's it's very thirst quenching and like really nice.
Yeah, I Welsh water where I'm from is quite nice actually. This is such a ridiculous thing, but whenever I'm visiting somewhere like someone's house that's like relatively far away, I will secretly judge their tap water. I can't secretly judge. Tap water for shit. I'm there doing
I was staying in a hotel once in London and they didn't have a shower, so I was like, I've been out in when you're in London, like you're just covered in filth when you come home in the evening, like just filth. Like you blow your nose and it's black. It's just awful. So I decided to go for a bath. I ran the bath, went out to do whatever, came back, and the bath water was just green. I was like, I'll skip bathing, I guess, for the next year.
Well, we used to occasionally get the iron coming through in the water.
Oh, so it's red?
It's sort of red, yeah.
Oh,
That's less, at least that's not green.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be copper, right? Copper a copper salt of some sort would be the green, but yeah, it didn't look good.
What about that means it comes through the pipes, not the copper. Yeah. Coppery water doesn't exist on, you know.
Yeah.
Water that's been cleaned by the, you know, the water board.
Yeah, it could very well have been algae. It's algae. Yeah, and the thing is, it's not algae that's itself that's necessarily gross. It's the fact that why does the algae grow there, right?
Like, exactly. What is it living on?
Yeah, because when we, I think they measure algae bloom as a symptom of pollution in the water, like nitrates or something.
Yeah,
possibly. Yeah. Anyway,
because then the algae the algae grows over and then it suffocates the stuff that light should get to it, and then it fucks with the ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, back to the Rocinante.
Yes. Okay.
And it's not like we're going off on tangents because this is a boring episode. This is a great fucking episode.
Yeah. Well, I don't think anything we say or do is a reflection on the episode, other than the actual things about the episode.
No, I think the thing is, when we do these episodes, I tend to watch the next episode relatively soon after. There's a good chance that I'll watch the next episode just today because I'm kind of keen to move on, but keen to watch it. But I do feel this was an episode that links into the next one, right?
It's building up again. I mean, I think it's a bit on the Rocinante when they're trying to, you know, fend off the Martians who want to board them. That bit's very exciting. I enjoy that bit a lot. But the rest of it is a build up to something. Yeah,
I was kind
of they're sort of bringing people together. The crews are all coming together.
I was kind of getting escape room vibes when I hope this isn't insensitive, Drew. Were escape rooms a thing when you were in the outside world?
No. I mean, there's been escape room, not necessarily called them that, but like games for a long time, but not the real world versions of them, not as far as I know.
Okay. I did one the other day, and not on my own with other people, but I gotta be honest, like when you're with a group of people there, like you've got to suppress your inner gamer, right?
Like, I can imagine.
I was with women, so I was a bit conscious of like I don't want to be like the man that takes control of everything. So I was very much like sitting back and I gotta think. I think like I know that escape rooms are supposed to be like an enjoyable puzzle for a group of friends.
Yeah.
But I reckon that like two people is the best number for an escape. I know people will disagree with that.
Yeah.
Two, maybe a third, like us three, I think would be pretty good at it. But, you know, I think one person might stand a better crack rather than you know, four, five, six people.
Yeah, I think the problem with it is there's always like one puzzle that you just don't get. I think for these things, if you ever play online, you know, the online ones.
I think that's the distinction between a genuinely cooperative game and a lot of stuff that's called cooperative. Like, if you're doing an escape room, the way that most puzzles are structured, it's just one person's going to get it and tell everybody else what to do. Whereas, like, I think the We Were Here games do it very well, where you've both got a part of the puzzle and you've got to communicate to put it together. That's when it works well, I think.
Yeah. Like the best Portal community maps.
The best Portal ones, yeah. And the We Were... Have either of you two played the We Were Here games?
No.
Okay, I have them both, but I've not played them.
Okay, you should play them.
People to play them with, and I keep forgetting
them together. You can only play them with somebody who's not played them before. You two should play them together, and I want to watch that, because they're amazing games.
Oh, well, I'm open for that. Have you got them, Chris?
I don't, but...
The first one's free. You can just get them. Honestly, the first one, not that the other ones are bad, but the first one's the best one, I think.
Okay. I mean, the Black Friday's on its, you know.
Yeah, no, you should get. We should do that soon. You two playing it, and me laughing at how angry Hamish is getting at Chris.
What makes you think it'll be that way around?
Oh, I see. So it's the English person setting the Scottish person against the Welsh person.
We've got to keep you divided.
Is this? Yeah, this is how
you gang up. We're fucked.
How you keep the union together? Is it?
Yeah, we talk about what happens to Rocinante other than him needing a piss. So we discover this stowaway who's sending out a radio signal when they're trying to be as quiet as possible.
Now, if they were on any other like less good ship, would that work? Right? Is it just because the ship was a bit?
Yeah, I think it's
staying quiet.
I think it's only happenstance that Alex notices the signal, right?
Yeah.
I think he just happens to be looking at the monitor at the right time and sees this signal, is the impression I get. Yeah, it could quite easily have gone undetected, I think.
Okay, good, yeah. One thing I wonder about this is, like, they talk a lot about the codes to, like, so Alex is like, oh yeah, the donkey balls thing, where it's like he murmurs a lot and then says donkey balls, and presumably donkey balls is the code word.
Or some of the other ones might have been.
Or maybe some of the other ones, yeah, because... so, like, he says something nonsensical, and then donkey balls, and then they say something nonsensical, and then say donkey balls. Well, it's not nonsensical; it's the three, the three code words.
No, I don't think they say them back. They just say received.
Yeah,
received and understood.
No, they don't say them back. Yeah, no, they don't say them back. As in, like, Alex says,
because, like, the problems on the ship have been so. I can't remember the first. Like, mendacious is one of them.
Mendacious is one of them. Yeah.
Ubiquitous.
Polyglot.
And then he just blurts out donkey balls just for good measure.
is it mendacious? Yeah. Are we supposed to not know whether or not it's like donkey balls is the open sesame secret?
I don't think
password.
It matters.
It's not donkey balls. Yeah. I think it's just
one of those three codes that are in the code book.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued as to how they knew which one was which. You know, when they open the thing, there's two of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that struck me. I think it's Alex because he's got Martian military training. Yeah, he just something about one of them that he recognized. Yeah,
right. Okay. Yeah. So mendacious and polyglot. Is polyglottal? Is that a speaking term?
I think so. Yeah, polyglot is somebody who speaks lots of languages.
Yeah.
Mm. What's is it?
I think.
Yeah. Polyglot is somebody who speaks multiple languages. Yeah.
Okay, right, okay.
Multilingualism, yep, it is.
Multilingualism, okay, yeah. I don't know how much Amos, does anything Amos does, like, matter in this episode?
Oh, yes. God, yeah.
All the time, every time there's an interaction with Amos, you're getting more clues about what makes him tick, how he's working. And the standoff between... Because Amos is pissed off at Holden because he sent the distress signal that got them, which he mentions in this episode. Yeah.
Which gets them in this mess, all this mess.
Yeah, which he what's the line? I actually wrote the line down because it was good. He says, you're the one who logged the distress signal. Welcome to the churn.
Yeah,
and he just
explained the churn.
What the churn is.
Yeah.
I think the important bit of that is when Holden points the gun at the back of his head, and Amos is just not in a bravado way. He's just like, "Yeah, take the shot if you need it." I think part of that is I don't think he thinks Holden will shoot him, and I don't think Holden would have shot him. And partly, like, he's doing what he thinks is necessary in this moment. And in that instance, I think he's right. I think if the Martians are going to board them.
Well, yeah, he does say, "I don't want to spend the rest of my life in a Martian gulag." You know.
Yeah, I love that they would use the word gulag as well.
Yeah,
and it's Mickey. Yeah. Mickey's is what the Martians Mickey, are as well.
I don't know because, like, the Martians don't seem particularly bad. Like,
they've stolen a Martian frigate, and again, like, as Amos says, as far as the Martians are concerned, they're the ones who blew up the Doniger, so they're at least going to be in jail for a very long time, right? Yeah. Like,
yeah, they're not going to be able to convince anybody, they don't think.
Yeah, Amos says, like, in this moment, they are the enemies and we're the fugitives or something like that. And, you know, and we've seen previously, you know, the Martian assholes boarding that Belter ice hauler.
Yep.
And mistreating.
Yeah. And do you notice that gets mentioned as well in the show?
Oh, does it?
And the news thing in the background.
I need to pay attention to those more.
Yeah, I never noticed them that much the first time around, but they sort of give you a... It's interesting, not so much that they're reiterating something that we've seen, it's that they're giving the spin on it.
Yeah.
And it's and you think that is a new... Yeah, that's a news channel from a certain point of view, you know?
Yeah.
Usually Earther's point of view.
I do need a space piss, but do carry on.
Space piss.
okay, so So we're learning a little bit about Amos's like life, yeah, life philosophy.
Yeah, then. He says when he was in Indianapolis, is it he says?
Baltimore.
Baltimore, that's it. Which is Baltimore's in
Earth.
No, not Earth. Baltimore is
Is it New East Coast? North?
No, Baltimore's in. Hang on, I'm going to have to look that up now because that's going to annoy me.
Yeah, it might.
I should know this from like American Maryland. Football. Yeah, you're right, Maryland. Yeah.
Ah, oh, see, yes.
Well done.
Yeah, because Maryland's tiny, so it's I don't know. Yeah. For a minute though, I thought I was going to say New York, but wasn't that far off?
No. Oh, do you want to know where it is as well? Is that what you want? I might as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have a quick look and see where it is on the map. It's hang on, see a map of the United States. Yeah, it's on the East Coast in the sort of vicinity of it's over there.
So I what I'm particularly interested in is how interesting. So I want to know what Adam Jensen does when he opens up the airlock panel.
It's clearly he's turned it into some kind of trap, because when Amos comes towards him, he says, "Yeah, come to me, big boy." Like something's going to happen to Amos when he tries to interact with the doors or the panel or whatever. But I don't know specifically.
But because the little camera image goes off the monitor and stuff.
Yeah. So he's
incompetent Adam Jensen.
Yeah. Is I mean, remember, they don't know that he's got these implants either. So.
Yeah. And also, I mean, his beard's not pointy enough. Adam Jensen has like a really pointy beard.
He's a very round looking version of.
Yeah. He's too round looking.
When he acts, he's got very loose movements.
And Adam Jensen's very tight, like a robot.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. Like, it shouldn't annoy me because there's nothing wrong with the performance. But the fact that he in any way deviates from Adam Jensen's characteristics.
Yeah. Which is a horrible thing to say about an actor. Like, you can only find you this one. Yeah.
And he's probably better as this character than Adam Jensen. Because Adam Jensen is not a particularly.
Well, the thing is, it's not even like seeing somebody. If you see somebody in a film and they've not been in anything else, and then you see them in something else, and you're like, "Oh, because it's not even like that." That's like a couple of. We've spent 30 plus hours with this character and this voice, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think that makes a difference.
I mean, over 100 for me, I think.
Yeah. So. No, that's assuming. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of. Yeah. Even though he's probably better in this than as Adam Jensen. And again, that's not any reflection on him as an actor. It's just that Adam Jensen is not a particularly interestingly written character. I don't think he's meant to be. Like,
No.
In the same thing that JC isn't an interesting character until...
I mean, generally, when you're a protagonist, when you are, especially the first-person game in a game with a degree of freedom, like, you don't want to make the main... I mean, classic is what's-his-face in Half-Life.
Gordon Freeman. Oh, you're a man of few words, aren't you, Gordon? Things like that comes up all the time,
Because you want the player to some degree, you know, it depends on the game, but you generally you want the player to, what's the word, like imprint or, that's not what I mean. But.
Overlay themselves.
Which is a little bit why Fallout 3 is, they go the opposite route in Fallout 3, where they give you a full backstory that you sort of live through in the training level. And then you escape out into the world, which I
hate that fucking that prologue in Fallout 3 is fucking tedious.
The fact that they don't give you a like just skip, like
first time it was tedious. It's not. I don't even mean on replays. The first time I played through, I was like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh, no, I didn't mind it the first time, but
in a game that predicated like the Elder Scrolls games are predicated on freedom of choice. They didn't make the same mistake in Skyrim, making the first bit so fucking on rails. It's so contrary to what the rest of the game is. Not in an interesting, contrast kind of way. Just let me fucking play the game.
Mm. I mean, Morrowind did it right, and Fallout New Vegas did it right.
Yeah.
But the idea that you give your protagonist a full developed backstory with all the trimmings is something that I don't mind. Like, I don't mind being in an open world game where you are a defined character, but they could have done it in a way that didn't involve you having to burn through 20 to 30 minutes on, because with no, there's no challenge. There's no, it's no. Just, you have to, like, it's a game where you have to do the tutorial every single time.
I saw somebody making an interesting point on Fedi that what I was saying about, you know, that they write the character so that you can identify as you are the character. Mm. Somebody's making the point that games are more interesting when they do the opposite of that, and you're playing somebody
else
that you, yeah, you don't identify. Not just somebody different, somebody you kind of disagree with and don't like. Mm. And that's more interesting. Like, yeah, is
yeah. A good point. I mean, that's kind of, yeah, I kind of get that. Like, I... I'd be interested if it, like, because none of us would be Commander Shepard, right? Like, if we were on the in that Star Wars universe, not Star Wars universe, Mass Effect universe.
I'm aware of it completely. Yeah. So,
but we wouldn't be the, like, with Commander Shepard, they put him as the straight line Jack Bauer type of Jake Bullitt kind of you know, action hero, and and I think that's why Jenna Hale does such a great job as the female lead in that series, because she makes the character
definitely. But it's still, I could see myself, you know, forced into Holden's, you know, in a world where I can leave my house, forced into Holden's situation, I could see myself behaving like Holden behaves.
Yeah, I think that's.
But that's not true of Mass Effect, because, like, it's very militaristic and authoritarian, and yeah, I think yeah, any of the characters in The Expanse, I could see myself. Like I say, when Amos is making his point about they're the enemy now, we have to kill them, otherwise we're fucked. Like, he's right.
Yeah, he's right. There, yeah.
Like, not necessarily.
Holden's trying to take a moral standpoint.
Yeah,
and Amos is being brutally practical, but correctly. Yeah. Mm.
Well, I mean, morals aside, like, you're not going to, your story is going to be more difficult to sell if you are seen and known killing a Martian, right? You can deny everything up until that point, but when you put a bullet in a Martian's head, suddenly you've got to defend that.
Seen, like, the Martians on the Doniger, the Martians, they don't necessarily, the story they're trying to sell, they don't really care whether it's the truth or not. They just need a story that they can sell. And if they've got these people captured, that's a very easy story. It's not going to matter. Like, you know, it doesn't matter how good your lawyers are. Like, they've decided you're going to be the scapegoats for this, and make it look for the people like, you know, we've caught the, you know,
caught the terrorists.
You're not playing on a fair playing field to begin with. So
yeah, and sure, I think Amos realizes that much more clearly than Holden does.
I mean, that, sure, but, like, presumably Mars do want to know what happened. Like,
well, they
for
do,
real.
But they still want a diplomatic.
They can retcon that later. Retcon that later when they, you know, but more important to appease the public are presumably clamoring for justice for the Doniger or whatever.
Mm. Oh, and also, one thing I just noticed, Adam Jensen has a Tycho jumpsuit.
Yes.
In the same way that they have the pure and clean.
Well, he was. We were more than implying, but in the last episode, you see him. He's one of the crew preparing the Rocinante. That's how he gets aboard. He's one of the Tycho crew. Working on that. You see him in the background.
Yeah, I mentioned that in the last episode.
Yeah.
Although it may be hard to pick out anything about The Expanse from the last episode.
You've only seen that dude once in a bar, and then going, you know, oh, that's the same dude.
I'm interested in the, I think it's the final. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know what to make of him, because he seems like he's trying to manipulate the crew as a spy probably would, right?
That's
like
he's very good at it as well. He's trying to set Amos against
Holden
against Amos, like, oh, you're not a brute like he is and all that stuff.
All that stuff was a bit,
But the final scene is quite interesting, because it's through his space eyes, and like, obviously that's the ominous.
But a bit from earlier, I should sort of clarify or add my detail to it. Amos isn't really pissed off with Holden. Amos is very pissed off with Naomi right now.
Yeah.
Because you know, everybody else sees him as this brute. He has a special relationship with Naomi, and Naomi, in that instance, treated him like the brute. Like, if I tell him the truth, he's going to go crazy. And that upsets him a great deal.
Yeah. So is he living in this paradox of, like, being not so much paradox, but I don't know, like, he's a brute that doesn't want to be a brute.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Yeah,
I think he's it's practical and survival.
He clearly relies on Naomi for something, and when that something is not there, he goes a bit off the rails, as we see.
Yeah. Naomi's the diplomat of the pair.
Yeah. So he doesn't like what the world has made him become, essentially, right?
I mean, I think that's a very accurate thing to say about Amos. Yeah.
Okay, so the final shot on the Rosnanti is of Adam Jensen, basically through Adam Jensen's eyes. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if this is going to be cropped or anything, but. Yeah, no. Hang on. Oh, yeah, but if I do this,
You're trying to get like the connecting to Wi-Fi bit on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There we go.
No.
Kenzo.
Kenzo. Adam Kenzo. Mad.
Kenzo Adam is his name.
Right. I can't go back over further enough, but it says no signal. No signal. Two bars out of
that doesn't mean anything in real life.
No network access. So I don't know where he's getting the two bars from if he's getting no network access.
Well, he's connected to the ship's Wi-Fi, but the ship's router isn't allowing him to connect to the internet.
Yep.
Right, so, okay, I mean, obviously it indicates that he's not able to communicate.
But
is he recording is the question. I think he does.
And that's important because of what What's his face, second in charge of the UN, says to Abisarello, like, he's missed his last three.
Oh, I should have looked his name up while I was
we're gonna kill Jimmy.
So he's no longer able to phone home. And also it's like, remember, he's a Wi-Fi boy, you know,
he's
like
a space spy.
Yeah, space spy.
They should have closed with the Deus Ex theme tune on this episode. I like what they do. Because they have the intro music, which, depending on the version you've got, sometimes you get a little snippet of, and so you get the full version. But at the end, it's sometimes music, it's sometimes silence, and it's sometimes just like eerie noises in the background. And I like that.
Yeah. That's also another one from Game of Thrones. And I like that they have the in-universe. The in-universe music, except for one episode in the entire show.
Oh, really? No.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones.
It's the Game of Thrones spoiler. It's the one where Jaime Lannister loses his hand.
No, they have a soundtrack.
They have a soundtrack after that, but it's not an in-universe song. It's like a punk rock song. And it has a purpose. There's a reason they chose that.
In like episode one, there's music playing during scenes that isn't. I can't remember the term for it. But.
No, we're talking the credit rolling when they roll the credits.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry.
Sorry, the credit scene. Sometimes it's background music. Sometimes it's silence and all that kind of stuff. But that one episode in the entire show, it's just a song. And there's, I don't think there's a. First time I watched that, I was like, what the fuck? Like, they just put a real world song in to close out Game of Thrones. But I think it's either a throwback to something or a reference to something or something. But
I think Hamish is getting restless.
No, I'm trying to find this guy. This is why we can't remember his name, Chris, because he's done it all the time, but he never gets mentioned very much.
Kento?
Funny.
There's a thought that always makes me uncomfortable when I have it. I don't know if I mentioned this before, but like if I'm watching Star Trek TNG, that show happens in our world, right, in the future, but in our universe. Mm. So Star Trek TNG takes place in a universe identical to ours, except that in that universe, Star Trek TNG doesn't exist. And that is weird.
yeah, I know what you're saying.
The only difference between our universe and their universe is in their universe, the TV show Star Trek The Next Generation doesn't exist.
Well, presumably Star Trek doesn't exist either.
Yeah, that's also true of any TV show.
Yeah.
The Human Centipede trilogy.
Oh, really?
That wasn't the one I was going to go for, but
the guy in the second one is inspired by the first one, and the guys in the third one are inspired by both the first and the second one.
Okay.
By
the movies, but not by the events that happened in the movies. They're inspired by the movies. By the events that happened in the movies.
Oh, yeah. No, so, yeah, the second Isn't one...
That, what?
The first one exists as a movie in the second one's universe.
Right.
And then the two movies exist in the universe as movies, not as real events, as movies.
The same thing still applies, then. No, maybe not. No, yeah, no, the same sort of... Centipede 1...
So what you're saying is the third one... The characters in the third one have seen two movies.
Yeah.
But those events didn't happen. In that universe,
yeah.
Right, okay.
In the universe of the first movie, the first movie doesn't exist, presumably.
Yes. There's no movies in the first Human Centipede.
So, is that a contradiction, then? So that means that the second movie doesn't exist in the same universe as the first movie.
Mm, yeah.
Well, the second movie exists ahead in time.
How do you mean in the future in comparison to the first
one? So the events of number one happen.
This is very important.
Then in the future, once that film is out. yeah. I guess it's a universe inside a universe, and then two universes inside another.
Yeah, you've got a
universe.
Chicken and egg thing going on with the first one.
Yeah, the first
one. That's not even the worst contradiction. The worst contradiction is the fact that they get the same actors in the first and the second movies to play characters in the third movie.
I mean, I'm okay with that. Like, the Star Trek again does that a shit ton.
But it's well, they don't play the same characters. They play different characters.
No, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, there's a few people in the Star Trek acting portfolio who've been around a lot.
I like the theatricality of that. I wish in movies and TV shows where they'll cut to the future or something, and then they put the actor in like old person makeup, or even worse, like CGI it. Just get a different fucking actor. Like, we're not idiots. Just get an old person to play them as an old person.
Actually, that's kind of interesting, because they did that in Fallout in the last episode, where one character from the future comes back. Mm. And the thing is it Walton Goggins? Is that the name of the actor?
Walton Goggins.
That's the one. And he is an established actor with a history, and we know what he looks like when he was young, and he doesn't look anything like the CGI aged down. But the thing is, the big reveal is that you're supposed to look, it pans over to his face or cuts over to his face, and it's like, oh, it's him. It's supposed to be like, oh, it's him moment, as in you're supposed to recognize it. But if you used either a different actor or if you could even go back and like time travel and actually get the young version, it wouldn't have the impact. And I suppose you'd have to be clever and weave that in some way to...
The worst one of these I saw is not exactly the same, but The Irishman. Which was a Scorsese kind of like sequel to like Casino or something, and it's got De Niro in it. But then it shows De Niro as a young man, and they do digital de-aging on him, but he still walks. It's like a man with a young person's face walking like an old man, because
right.
You work and it's
your gait changes hard. Over time, as it
very jarring.
It's
a fucking young actor, man.
Anyway, do we have a point at this juncture?
I can't think of anything that.
Yeah, we sort of jumped around. We didn't really go linearly with the Rocinante stuff, but I think we covered it all. So that's the main point.
I did one bit aesthetically. I just really like
there's one thing. Sorry, carry on.
Okay, When the locker pops up out of the floor,
uh-huh.
and he puts his little ID card thing in it, and then what seems to be just like an opaque matte surface, then has like the computer text on it of enter the 24-digit code. I really like that. I think
that's a real life thing. I've seen that.
Oh yeah.
You got that back in like the '70s even.
Oh really?
It was basically, if you look close enough, you'd see it as basically just a smoked thing. Mm. Obviously, they probably did it with a more modern bit of equipment, where it's actually the screen as well. But
I love how that looks. I think
it's cool. Yeah, they used to do that with like LEDs. I've seen
people reusing old Android tablets and putting it behind a mirror. So you get up in the morning, you look at your mirror, and it's got like the news on it and stuff, which is cool.
I was going to say one more thing about the Rust and Anti, but there is, of course, we've been around both bits of it, but there is the little bit where Holden and Naomi are talking before Amos comes back up, and he's talking about getting him back on his lead or whatever, and she's saying, "Well, I never had him on a lead," you know, and it's you can see that the tension with Holden and Amos hasn't subsided like it did between, say, Amos and Alex, you know.
Yeah, I think what's different there is reasonably so, but Holden doesn't understand Amos at this point. At all.
And he wants him off the ship. He says once we get to Eros or wherever once we get back to Ceres or something, we want him off the ship. But does he think that? It's interesting because this is the interesting point about it is, I think, does that mean that he thinks Naomi will side with him and stay with him, but dump Amos after, you know, when they're so obviously a couple in around a certain way. They've got a very big, a very deep bond, you know. So it's interesting as to what he thinks about that. But, you know, I suppose that'll play out.
I mean, does he say that in the heat of the moment? Is that more of a...
I don't think so.
I think it could be read that way, but...
Maybe he's angry at that moment.
I mean, he's expressing genuine concern that Amos is basically a hothead, right? Like he's
dangerous to the crew themselves, almost.
Yeah, like
which is why Amos was angry with Naomi for them for her thinking that about him.
And I
think his point there is like he would never do anything to hurt Naomi, you know. But then would he? If he's that practical, would he?
Well, he's upset that she doesn't know that.
Yeah,
because he would never hurt. He would never hurt.
Yeah, he would.
But also, it's not a case of him being in any way like, I don't say duplicitous, but like, you know, being turning on his friends, but more so much as he thinks he knows best, and then just charges ahead with what he thinks knows best
and what is best
for other people.
I think that's part of it. I think in this instance he was right, but you could certainly imagine a situation where,
I don't know. I mean, I'm still on the fence about that one. But I mean, that's
Amos does that to you.
You don't even do a genocide in Deus Ex.
Going back to the aesthetics, though, as I was flicking through this episode, the use of color is kind of amazing here. So I've got here, this is Adam Jensen. There's a lot of blue.
Kenzo. On
the Kenzo. So obviously very blue. Like everything on the Rastinante is blue. So each of the scenes seem to have like a color scheme. So when Avasarala is going to, she's approaching the house. Then you see, a very striking.
She's got red and orange, isn't she?
Well, there's a lot of red and orange in the scenes inside the house here. Ooh.
Well, that's warmth, you know, motherliness, homeliness.
Yeah, homeliness. And amongst the snowy landscape, there's this
amongst the snowy landscape. Because then, she's got. And then, because like, just a lot of striking color, just purely aesthetic there, where she's like the contrast there is just like she's
lovely. It's a lovely little bit aesthetically.
Yeah, and also, And I always wonder how they do this on movie sets. This, like, she's breaking in through the snow.
Yeah, so if you had to do several takes,
obviously you have to do several takes. Like, they probably do like 30, 40 takes. Yeah.
Well, you don't see her face most of the time.
Oh, that's true.
It'll be a crane shot with a.
No, but I was thinking about that. Like, you've got to smooth the snow over every time.
Yeah, yeah, but you don't need to do that for the closer up stuff. But you probably have to do it for the wider shots. I'd have to watch it in detail to see how often you could get away with it. Yeah, because it's the same in Sands.
Ruined the magic, Hamish. You've ruined the magic there. I'm watching it now.
You could probably just CGI the snow.
The camera cutting is actually, other than a couple of shots, I don't know. Yeah, I'll show. There's a lot of.
I'm sorry, I burst your bubble again. I feel really bad. I'm ruining Chris's childhood here.
The shots now is just become very like the shot that's on the screen now. That's like one of the shots, but like there's a lot of shots like that sort of give the impression of it where she's. Okay. There, where she's like cropped at the bottom.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course there's the close up.
It's just clever framing.
Yeah, that could be anyone as well. Like, because
I'm really sorry. No, it's not. It's all the Shorei Agadashu.
It's wonderful movie magic because I always wonder, like, you know, when they're doing talking scenes, the number of times that they, in post, change lines.
Oh, yeah.
Chris, they're not really in space.
What? Oh, my God.
I've thrown him with that, sorry. You have thrown me with that. It was not in space. Are we going to call this Earth Virgins now? That sounds like a gardening show. should we get into gardening and that'll be the sequel to Space Virgins?
we'll do the whole of gardening question time from the beginning, like episode by episode.
Oh my god, yeah, oh my gardener's god. Question time. How long has that been?
6,000 years.
Sorry, Chris, you were trying to make a point about the aesthetics and I was just...
They were nice.
I want to thank, like, because like we said, like looking at it through new eyes and that, I never put the Don Quixote with the actual windmills in the background of the.
Neither did I. I never clicked with that either.
That's cool, Chris.
Very
cool. Yeah.
Well, no, that was Drew.
No, that was you. That was you.
You said about all you. It's all you.
So I don't know what this one is. this is another one, but I don't know if it means anything. That's red, but everything else in that shot is blue. Like
what is the show? I can't really see what's going on there.
Part of it is on the Martian chips, including the Rocinante. I think they have. I think they have red light for normal light, and then they go to blue light for when they're in battle. Like a submarine will go to red light, I think, in battle, and it's red because that doesn't hurt your night vision or something, right?
Yeah.
So
it's like, and I think Alex refers to it as like, oh, they've gone to mood lighting, like jokingly referring to it as mood lighting when, you know, on the Doniger when they're going into battle. The Martian ships seem to go to blue for when things are tense or you're expecting.
I wonder if that's meant to reflect Mars being red-ish and then blue red, being the Earth colour, the opposite of danger.
But is there a
I think there's meaning to it. I think it's just, you know, red and blue contrast nicely and it makes a nice aesthetic frame.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, so red doesn't fuck with your night vision.
No,
red. Yeah, if you've got like I've got an app on my phone that lets you look at the stars and look stuff up in the night sky, and it's got a red mode where everything's just shades of red, and that's mess with your night vision. Yeah,
that's nice.
Because you've got it's vision purple is your night vision.
And it is interesting how I know this is definitely true for Star Trek, but starships in TV and films, like they're often like the closest analog to Earth is a submarine.
Not it's not a ship as much because you can't go up on a deck anywhere, can you? You can't just stand on the deck. Submarine is the best. If you look at Wrath of Khan, Star Trek: The Wrath of Khan, that's definitely a submarine battle in space.
Yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
yeah.
I think the blue looks good with the spaceship and everything in the background.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That's, I get far too much fun out of these. The
I was going to get on a tangent there, but it's not. I don't want to keep this video going far too long.
So. Yeah, I mean they're bayonet bulbs, so you can put them into standard fittings.
Oh right, okay, it's not illegal.
So it's not.
I want to. I want to hear Hamish's tangent.
Do you want to hear it on the video?
Yeah, to go for it. Yeah.
Okay, right. I was going to say I've not got one there, but those panels that I've been looking at recently, those LED panels, I was thinking about doing that. You know, you could do coloured lights with them. You know, it could be like a stage lighting type effect. But I also, the thing I discovered about them is that one board, kind of, you know, there's five of them. One board uses 8 amps, which is a lot of electricity. Yes, that's
how much would a light bulb use?
That's like one panel being a 40-watt light bulb, if it's at full brightness.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Although isn't that the wattage of old light bulbs, like pre energy saving?
Yeah. Well, yeah, an energy saving light bulb would be like 8 watts or something.
I think my old
style light bulb.
Yeah,
an LED doesn't use much electricity.
But no, when
you put nearly 800 of them in an array, or 768 or whatever it is in an array, then they start to use more. Plus, there's a logic board and so forth, and they are quite bright as well. They can be very bright. But they're such cool things. It's just, I was thinking about using, what I was thinking about doing with one of them was make it a present for a child, actually, like something they could put on the door or on their wall with things on it. And then I thought, oh, how much power would that use? But yeah, you'd need a power, you know, a power adapter. It's not a lot. Yeah. The point is that I was testing it using USB, which is I think I was running it off a 1 amp connection. So there was a bit of a flicker and I think I was probably not getting the right thing, but it was just a test pattern, so I just didn't leave it running or anything.
I think for season two of Space Virgins, you should have them set up so when we're talking about like conflict, you can go to the blue lighting. That would be cool.
Well, I was thinking about, before I thought about using the panel for it, I did think about having, because I get a lot of lighting problems in here, and I don't want to put, I've got studio lights, which are like big things, but the problem with them, it's not the light itself, it's the footprint of it. Because it's on a big tripod, that's the problem I've got. So what I was thinking is having like a string of white LEDs around the screen or something. But I could put RGB ones.
Like I've known people, not for YouTube, but I've known people use it like for bedroom lighting where they want a very soft, warm, but like all over kind of tone. You know, not many shadows type of thing. To use Christmas lights, like fairy lights.
Oh, I've seen people with those in their bedrooms. Yeah, it seems to be teenage girls like that. You know, not that I hang around a lot of teenage girls' bedrooms. That sounds a bit weird, but you know what I mean. You see them on TV shows or whatever.
But what the ones I've got, basically, I've got like a bunch of like three. I've got normal light and then a couple of lamps that I literally got from car boot sale for like £3. And then I whacked in some of these the LED bayonet bulbs. So they're like £6, so that's pretty good going. So I got three of those, and then you just get a little. They come with these kind of things, and then you can just all three of them. One of these affects all of the lamps, so it's not like one is paired with one. If I want like different levels of lighting for different things, I've worked out where to point it.
Like clever, where one doesn't catch the beam and the others do.
But very nice. and you can get the you can put them up to full brightness there, and that's pretty good. I've got obviously natural light coming in at the moment, so I'm a bit overexposed. So I could do, but then I like doing this is actually yellow light, but it's being picked up as like a sort of a ready light, and then this is red light, extra red.
If anybody's interested in how I achieve my lighting, I'll do a separate video. It'll take too long.
This is all natural light at the moment. There you go. We've all covered it. Right. So shall we say goodbye to the lovely people at home?
Yeah. We've done that one.
Oh, thank you all very much.
Okay.
Bye.